Thanks very much for attending this session. Just real quick, so I can get a lay of the land. Hands up, how many of you are on a marketing team? Okay, how many of you are on a social media team only? Okay, and then how many of you are executives? All right, excellent. So hopefully what you're gonna get from me is a very pragmatic, some people might even say a little negative or cynical look at social media, what works, what doesn't work. I've worked for companies that you've clearly never heard of, except for Oracle. I've worked for a lot of small companies, a lot of local or geographically focused companies, a lot in tech. So I think what you're gonna get out of this presentation is a really pretty in-depth look at what I found has worked in the last 18 months, what hasn't worked. I really view social media as kind of a curse and a blessing, and we'll talk a little bit about that, especially when it comes to expectations from the executive teams. I'll talk about, you know, at the end of the day, in marketing, I say I do one of two things. I do brand awareness or I do lead generation. And a lot of times executives will say, well, no, you really do lead generation. And then we'll talk about really the importance of consistency, repetition and frequency of your messaging, some real world examples. So I'm gonna start off by kind of the lesson learned and then show you three very distinctive case studies of what's worked and why it's worked. So a little bit about me, 24 years, all B2B, that's all I've ever done. I've never done business to consumer. 23 years in-house, so running a marketing team, various roles. Most recently, I've been a chief marketing officer for a technology company. Pretty much all my experience is technology as in-house, but marketing to a lot of different industry sectors. And then I've been heading up a creative agency. All right, so, you know, I think of it as a curse and a blessing, because whenever I look at marketing, and I use these with a lot of boards, it's like, that's the plan, right? It's so simple, we're just gonna ride down the road. But the reality in social media is definitely victim of this. You find out that it's really not a straight road. You got some rocks, boulders, you have a creek crossing, you have to use a ladder. There's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of things that are gonna happen from point A to point B, and that's just the reality. And you've heard some of the past speakers talk about failing and failing fast and all these things, and I have the same lessons. You know, one of the things, again, coming at a more the technology side, which, by the way, any of you focused on the technology sector? Are you marketing to IT folks, things like that? Just a handful, okay. You know, this is a pun, socially awkward. If you've been to a lot of technology conferences, it's a lot of what we call the t-shirt and backpack crowd, not the most social people. But when it comes to social networking, what's really challenging with that particular sector, and I think you're gonna see this in other parts of the world as well, in industries, is they're intensely private. And one of the things that I've been marketing to is chief security officers, for instance. And I'll tell you, they go through tremendous efforts to obscure who they are, right? They'll connect over VPNs, they'll use the private mode. They really go out of their way to make sure that you cannot figure out who they are. Because they want to be in control, and they know exactly what we're doing, right? When they hit your website or where they go like something on a social posting, they know we're tracking, they know they're probably gonna get a call, right? So they wanna be in control, and it makes them a very, very difficult audience to target with social media. And for the most part, too, if you look at Twitter and Facebook and some of these things, it's purely personal. They do not mix business on these outlets. So LinkedIn is really your best bet. And again, I think there's a lot that, to learn here about understanding your audience and who you're gonna go after. The reason I'm spending so much time here is I dealt with a lot of situations where, again, at the board level, we would be told, hey, you're not doing enough social media and you gotta start investing it because that's where it's at. And for the most part, it's a complete waste of time because the audience is just not there. In these traditional social media. So why don't you just do more Twitter or, you know, because it doesn't matter. And you'll see some of the examples, just not that many followers. There's always some exceptions, but for the most part, it's just not very successful. Now, The thing where it becomes really important and where social media can play into it, it's also an audience that's very thirsty for information. And they're always looking for things that are relevant to their job, that's going to make their lives easier. So back to content, you have to serve up that content. And you have to believe that if you can make it easy for them to find this content, and social media is one of those channels, and you don't make it difficult for them to get it, meaning you're not going to gate it, it's going to allow you at some point to build some brand recognition with them, and hopefully they'll come back and tell you who they are. And usually that's done through some kind of form. And you have to be very, very patient. Also, one of the things I've played with is gamification and then earning achievements. And again, if you can sort of turn this into a little bit of a game, then you have a higher shot. This all takes a lot of patience. And I suspect, while this is very particular to the technology sector, there's a lot of other sectors where there's very similar behavior and a lot more awareness that I'm not going to click on that link in that email because I know what's going to happen. 10 minutes later, my phone's going to ring from Joey saying, "Hi, Joey, I saw you clicked on my link. Did you want to buy something?" Right? So more and more people are very aware of those tactics. All right, so what do I mean by curse and a blessing? So it's all about managing expectations. And I really think in B2B, it has its place. I think 18 months ago, I was really struggling with how are we going to make social media an important part of building brand awareness and demand gen. And this is the point, and you'll see this in my case studies. It has to be part of a complete plan. It's a part. It is not an entire strategy by itself, and it feeds into some of the other elements of your plan. Particularly if you're a marketing executive, you have to deal with completely unrealistic expectations. I have many friends who are CMOs. One is a CMO for a billion-dollar technology company in the Bay Area. He was mandated by the board to go full bore after social media, hire a team of 12 people, build out all this content, all these channels, all of this. They spend millions of dollars establishing a social media presence, and they got absolutely nothing to show for it because they built components that go into LCD displays and things like that, and their target audience is not on Twitter. Okay. And most commonly, the expectations that you have to deal with, and I've dealt with this many, many, many times, is, well, you should be doing more social media because we want to drive market share, we need more revenue, we need more leads, and we want leads that are more profitable. And social media can do that. We've seen it with all these other companies in our portfolio. Not true. And then it takes time, right? It really, you have to commit. And it's very difficult when you're places like Oracle. I worked a lot with Microsoft. They measure everything in quarters. And then when you're in a VC-backed startup like I've been, they measure things in every 6 weeks, which is when you have a board meeting. And it can be very difficult to show progress and stick to it. So, it can be very, very hard to show an ROI, right? So you have to build a case and you have to build enough data points to make sure that you can keep going and see it pay dividends on your investment. All right, so you heard me say, I'm a really simple person. I like to keep it simple to understand. So to me, as a marketer, I have two jobs, brand awareness and lead generation. But at the end of the day, that's what I'm measured on, that's what I'm paid on. It's no different now that I'm running a creative agency. A lot of our clients hire us for basically those two things, right? And there's some subtleties behind it, but at the end of the day, it's that simple. So I would say when it comes to social media for B2B, your primary goal is going to be brand awareness. You get to build a better brand. You get to play with your brand. You get to do fun things maybe, or things that are a little less serious. Or you can explore different subject matters. You can see how the market's going to respond to maybe new directions for your company. And it really provides a whole other dimension for your brand. One of the biggest things, if you're not doing this, is you need to understand, and there's already comments about algorithms changing and all that. Social media is playing a very important part now in the algorithms that Google and Bing and others are using to figure out where to put you in your rankings, right? So you have to have a social media strategy, even if it's just LinkedIn or Twitter or one of those things, and know that how well those channels perform for you has a direct impact on how well natural search or your indexing by the search engines. Lead gen, it definitely has a play, but to me it's secondary, and I stress at best. Right? B2B, and particularly in the space I've come in, is a long sales cycle. It's a multi-touch sales cycle, 6 months to 18 months, depending on the businesses I've worked in. So this concept of, I can run a cute little ad on Instagram and bing, bang, boom, my cart's full, doesn't work, right? And so again, trying to deal with a situation where we spent X amount of media buy on LinkedIn, what did we get out of it? It can be very difficult to draw a direct line, right? And you can burn through a lot of budgets, and I've burned through a lot of money on Facebook and got absolutely nothing to show for it. Okay, so one of the other problems, and I don't know whether your business is like that, and I won't do a show of hands because I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I can tell you that most companies that I've worked with, sales have become catchers, right? They want to catch leads, and what they ask marketing to do is deliver more leads. Where are all the leads? You know, we have a website, and we have social media. I'm sitting by the phone on my computer, and I'm waiting for leads, right? Why? Because cold calling and reaching out, even reaching out through social media, is really, really hard, right? And it's become harder and harder, and we talk about 6 touch points or 7 touch points. Latest stats I saw were up to 9 touch points, right? So you have to do a combination of email, social media, reach out, and then calling. And for the most part, a lot of salespeople don't like doing that, they don't want to do that, so they want marketing to feed them leads. But I think a lot of this is about to change. So I love Gartner, I'm a big fan of Gartner, right, the largest technology analyst firm in the world, and they always have these fantastic predictions that are like conveniently 3 years out. But their latest here that they've been touting is that for B2B technology purchases, 30% of the decisions by 2020 will be made by checking on LinkedIn first, meaning, do I know somebody that works for this company? Can somebody help me validate that this is a good product or a good service for what I'm looking for? So if they're right, and I'm definitely seeing some indication of more sophistication around looking at LinkedIn to figure out whether this is a company I want to work with. So a lot of these rules are about to change, right, where it is going to become a feeder for your funnel. So now let's get back into content a little bit and some of the lessons learned. So there's a million rules. All you have to do is Google like content strategy and things like that, and you'll hear all these different things. The rule of thirds about how much you're sharing about your company or promotion or trying to engage and converse with people. There's the 5-3-2 for social, where you're doing curation. Again, it's really more industry content or news. Creation is things you're creating, and then personal is more about your brand identity. And then there's a third one that I've personally paid attention to, the 60-30-10 golden rule. A little different than the other ones, because it's basically more suggestive that you need to do 60% curated. Right, so this is industry news, it's you commenting on things that are going on. It typically has nothing to do with your business, right? You're not promoting your business, you're promoting your thought leadership, your understanding of the industry. 30% is owned, so it's content that you've created. And again, now you can start to talk a little bit about yourself or make it relevant to your particular business. And then 10% is promotional. Okay, now I'm asking you to perhaps buy something, or I'm featuring a new product, or I'm giving a promo, or a discount, or whatever it may be. My assertion is that actually works, and I've used this pretty effectively for the last 12 months or so. But it's a lot of work, right? So many of the companies I worked for, the marketing team is a very, very big team of me, myself, and I. And then, you know, a couple consultants. So we've been very, very busy, and it's hard to maintain that cadence because the 60-30-10 rule says if you're going to do 10 posts, this is the blend, right? So you have to do 6 posts that are about the industry, and timing is important, right? This is where consistency, repetition, and frequency, this is why this section is called that, right? Consistency is making sure that you're on point with your brand. The repetition is making sure that you have some themes that you carry over and that connect to your brand, and then the frequency is both where it's going to be and then how often you do it. And I always tell my clients, I said, if you want to get into social media, it's better to do 1 meaningful post a month than to hit the out of the gate and do like 5 posts in a week and then you stop for 3 months, right? That's way worse. So Start slow, but be steady, and make sure you have really good frequency. Okay, so back to our lead gen person. So it can definitely prime the pump for sales, okay? But again, you have to be really patient, because what it can do, and it gets to be more anecdotal and evidence. You'll hear people say, or clients after we've converted them, they'll say, oh, we see you guys everywhere. And what they're talking about is they're seeing us on LinkedIn, and they're seeing us on Google searches because we're remarketing. And then ultimately, you can drive them to a landing page, and that's where you'll convert them. And I think the discipline that you have there is to really make sure you have a good funnel management process. Who's a suspect, right? This is just somebody that's interested because they've downloaded a data sheet or they've viewed one of your videos that you've gated or whatever. It's not a client, it's not a lead, it's a suspect. It's somebody that's looking at what you do. A prospect is somebody that now has filled a form and is asking for a meeting or a follow-up or is downloading a copy of your demo or a copy of your product, whatever it may be. And then obviously you have customers, and customers, that's an important segment, right? You constantly need to be remarketing to your own customers. I don't know how many of you are in a situation where over the last 6 months, you've lost a customer because they didn't know that you did this, right? Because they know you for this thing over here, very happy with this thing, but I really want this thing over here, and I went and bought it from another company, and they happen to do this thing over here too, so yeah, I give them all the business. You're like, yeah, but I do this thing over here, right? Because they didn't know. And that happens a lot as well. And then it's about patience and it's about conviction, because a lot of things that you can do in social media may not be directly correlated to what they're doing. So for instance, if I'm gonna host an open house with cocktail hour and fun stuff, and I'm promoting it on social media, it can be very difficult to figure out how many of the 50 people that showed up in the room showed up because they saw the social media ad. Right, because they might have not had to register, or maybe they registered, but they didn't click from the social media ad. They remembered to do it later, or maybe you were emailing them as well if it's a customer. So it can be very difficult to measure how important that social media element was to it. A couple other things. I'm a big fan of analysts and the way that they look at it. So if you look at Jeffrey Moore's Crossing the Chasm in technology, but I think this applies to just about any sector. You have a life cycle, right, where anything is new and then there's a progression, and it's a bell curve in terms of the amount of people that are going to be interested in what you do. And hang with me, because this directly impacts to your content strategy and even what channels you want to use. And then back to my friends at Gartner. Actually, I think the hype cycle is brilliant, and I think it goes, again, it's for technology, but it really applies to just about any sector. So it's this concept that when you roll something new, people are super excited, and then there's all this momentum, and everyone's super excited about it, and then there's the trough of disillusionment, right? Well, I'm sure a lot of you have technology that you've purchased, you're so excited, and then it's like, this is a piece of trash, it doesn't do anything of the things that I want to. And then what happens is the technology companies rev them, or they do a patch and things like that, and then you get out of this trough of disillusionment and this slope in alignment. And it's amazing how many things that touch our lives have a hype cycle like this. Now, what gets really interesting is when you combine the two, because there's a direct correlation between the amount of people that you can go after and where you're at. So the lessons learned here, and I'm going through this really fast, and I apologize, and you can come ask me questions about it, is across any industries, you can learn from this, and you can understand where am I and which stage am I in, because it directly impacts the maturity of the content, how robust your content needs to be, can it be a teaser, or am I dealing with something that's already pretty established, so I have to build a lot of evidence to get somebody to move over from one of my competitors. It has some really important ramifications, and also addresses the size of the market, right? So if you're over on the left side, you can be pretty edgy, you can be pretty secretive, you can be pretty promotional, but know that your world is really small. This is not about getting a million followers. This is about getting 50 of the right followers. And as you progress in there, some of those bells and whistles and dials start to change. Okay, so then think about what's the right content based on where I'm at in the evolution of what I'm doing. And then this is an important part, is I fundamentally believe that which social media channel or combination of channels you want to use changes as this happens. So typically I find that, and it's a little overly simplistic, but you know, you can start with Twitter on the innovators. You'll find some of those folks. They're looking for news and things like that. Particularly in B2B, you got to start pretty early with LinkedIn, but you got to be careful with LinkedIn because you need to be mature enough and robust enough, and you can't have just a splash page with no information because people are going to look for more. And then you can start to look at Instagram, and YouTube's big, but I think YouTube, you have to be pretty mature. You have to have a cadence of videos and content, and again, take people to a robust website or downloadables. You know, Facebook, we all laugh about it. I mean, my mom loves Facebook. She's not my target audience for any of the companies I've worked for. I think Facebook kind of comes later. And then there's our friends at Google, and well, based on the announcements this week, exit right, thank goodness. I was never a big fan. I mean, the thing that was not nice about Google Plus was that Google was disproportionately putting too much weighting to whether you had an active social profile on Google Plus to impact your search rankings. So we'll see how they decouple that, but there really is no reason to have it anymore. All right, so a picture is worth 1,000 words. In my case, an animated picture and 1,000 words is what you get. So, content versus design. It's a battle that I've lived every company I've worked for when it comes to how many dollars you're gonna put into it. So, most of the companies I've worked for, they don't wanna pay for design. $150 an hour with a graphic company? What are you talking about, you know? All we just need is good content. But then what happens is you get this really good content, but it doesn't look good at all, right? So how many of you have had data sheets which just look like a fifth grader put it together? Me, right? And then on the other side, you know, if you decide you're gonna go the creative route and you hire this really cool design shop, and what they'll tell you is, we'll make it look good, right? It could be a pile of steaming turd. It doesn't matter, right? Because it's gonna look really good. And you've seen a lot of companies that do that, right? It looks really good, and you start reading it, and it's got spelling mistakes, and the content makes no sense, and doesn't tell a story, I don't understand the value prop, I don't even know who you're talking to, right? How many of you have seen those? All right, so in my world, they're equal. So if I have a dollar to spend, half of that dollar needs to go to content creation, and half of that dollar needs to go to design. I think in this over-communicated, oversaturated world, you have no choice. You have to have good content that happens to look really good. Because really good is how you get their attention, but then it's gotta pay off, right? The content has to support how good it looks. So they are equal. But there's a third dimension. It has to be optimized for where it's gonna go, right? And this is where we're back to social media, right? If your goal is to have really good content that looks really good and it's gonna be on Instagram, you gotta make sure it looks really good for Instagram and it meets all of Instagram's prerequisites and sizing and all these things, right? All right, so one last thing. I mean, some good news, and this is not an advertising. They don't pay me. They're not a client. I've just used them. There's a lot of automation tools out there. CoSchedule is one that I've used. What's really nice about it is you can create your post, and then you can have, I think they're up to a different, like a dozen platform, and they'll schedule it as these smart algorithms that figures out what time's better during the day to post your thing. And you can repost, and you can basically create a whole calendar of activity that's all connected together. You have to be careful. It's not as simple as, you know, building a really nice image that works on Facebook and saying job done. There's some subtleties, and you still have to tweak it. But boy, it saves a lot of time, right? And then the calendar view makes it really easy for you to figure out where we're at, or do we have some holes? And then this particular platform has a lot of analytics as well, so you can see how many clicks and all these things. So I'm a big fan of that platform. There's lots out there. But again, for the one-man band or the one-person band, I highly recommend that you invest. This is not cheap. It's about $900 a year. But it saved me hours and hours and hours. And back to the boards and all that, I go, why would you spend $900 on that? Because I don't have to work 23 hours a day. I can work 22 and a half hours a day by using this. Okay, so now let's get into the case studies, right? So these were all the lessons learned. And I have three. So one is Atmosera. They're a cloud provider, really big in the Microsoft ecosystem. I was their chief marketing officer for 4 years. And you'll see the theme with all these case studies is it's combined. Social media is combined with other things. So there was print and digital ads, as well as email campaigns. The primary vehicle was LinkedIn. There was Twitter and Facebook followed suit, but really the focus was LinkedIn. How many of you are from the West Coast? All right, who's from LA? All right, you know Roe DTLA? Okay, right, so Roe, we'll get into this. It's a pretty amazing shopping and office area. And the developer behind Roe is doing a lot of really cool stuff on Instagram, and we'll talk about it, because this is B2B. It has a B2C component, but the main reason they're doing it is for B2B, and I'll talk about that. And then another LA example, we have a lot of clients in LA. Like New York, it's a very competitive real estate market. And again, yet another twist on how they're using social media to drive B2B presence. Okay, so in the case of Atmosera, we were building a brand and trying to drive leads. And as I mentioned, primarily it was LinkedIn, but because we were using automation, it was easy to then make sure that the post went on Twitter and Facebook. And again, anecdotally, what you get out of this is people saying, oh, I see you everywhere, right? All they really paid attention to was LinkedIn, but if they happened to be over the weekend on their Twitter, they would see it as well. What we did is, you know, pretty striking visuals. This was not that expensive. I mean, you just buy the images and you come up with catchy lines. And one of the things I want to highlight, this is not like some of the speakers from earlier today where you measure it in millions of followers, right? They have about 500 followers, but they're the right followers. And some of these posts only got 10 likes, but one of those likes becomes a lead, right? And that's what's important. So again, you hear me talk about expectations and boards and things like that. Sometimes it's not a numbers game. What you're looking for is truly quality, right? And that can be very frustrating because we all know that size matters and how many followers you have matters. And well, not always, right? You need to be okay with the fact that this particular promotion only garnered 10 likes, but boy, two of those were really good folks. And so one of the things that happened over a very short period of time is our traffic to the website from LinkedIn grew from 0 to 30%. So not only did the total volume of traffic on the site almost double inside of a year, but now 30% of it came from LinkedIn, right? And I couldn't always connect where and how, because you know, back to my statement earlier, a lot of them will obscure their tracks, right? But that's pretty important. Twitter, the number of followers was up 414% inside of 12 months, right? Now, 414% is not too shabby, and it was good. And it was, again, influencers, it was some of our competitors, folks that would follow us and would start to like some of our posts. And it's all about building that brand and, again, building what the search engines are looking for. Are you reputable? Do you have a good engagement strategy on social media? Now, this one's really important. Zero sales, right? Zero sales. So while 30% of the traffic came from LinkedIn to my website, I could not attribute a single sale to it. But most of our sales came through remarketing. In fact, 100% of all the new customers that we had in that year, so think about that, all your new logos, right? New customers, net new customers, people we never sold to, 100% of them came from SEO and pay-per-click, and social media was part of that cadence and that frequency. Right, so pretty powerful. I mean, this made the board stop asking any questions. It's like, you mean to tell me that marketing delivered 100% of all the new revenue last year? Yep. Okay. And again, it was a combined strategy. And again, you know, I encourage you to be pretty playful. So Atmosphere is a Microsoft Azure shop. Azure competes with Amazon AWS. So we just came up with this fun little thing about let's get you out of Amazon. This was about 12 months ago when I think Amazon was suffering a little bit from being the 2,000-pound gorilla in the industry, and some companies started to be not very happy with them, and they were increasing their pricing. So there was a growing negative sentiment about how, well, maybe I don't want to be on AWS, and let's look for some alternatives. So, you know, we played with this, and again, it's combined. This was on social media. We also the company was on the West Coast, so we ran some Alaska Airlines ads, right? A lot of technology people travel. And again, a lot of anecdotal evidence that this was working. We were getting calls from competitors. We were getting calls from AWS reps that knew the folks that worked for my company, giving us the bird for running this ad. You know, so all these things are about building that brand awareness. But it was a complete package. There was a landing page, there were some blog posts, and it was a sustained campaign for a while. All right, now let's talk about Roe. So Roe is this really, really cool development. It's 30 acres right on the edge of the Art District. It's next to the old American Apparel headquarters. It's just about to go live, or they started to go live with some of the various tenants. Huge, right? 500,000 square feet of retail space, 1.3 million of creative office space. One of the big investment firms behind it is Atlas. They're here in New York as well. And what was really interesting is they're kind of behind the scenes, right? But they're spending a lot of money on marketing. They're doing newsletters, they're doing landing pages. The website for Roe is pretty elaborate at this point. And what's interesting is they really now want to own and drive all communication. And this is where we get to the B2B, right? And historically, and we have other developer clients on the West Coast who don't want to do any of this. It's like, what do you mean? I got to spend $20,000 on a website. No thanks, pass. But what's happening is people who have nothing to do with the project will go pop up a website and start to own the communication around that project and own some of the social media. So Atlas understands that they have to drive all this. They should not wait for somebody to go, oh, gee, there's an opportunity here. No one's registered RoeDTLA.com, I'll just do that and then hold them hostage, right? So it's a big thing that they're doing around pushing that. So for them, it was all about building the brand. This is a very long-running construction project. As I mentioned, it's just starting to go live, but it's got still some ways to go. And their big focus was Instagram. And what they have with Instagram is 30,000 followers, right? Which is not too shabby. And again, a lot of it is target tenants and some of the consumer traffic. And in 12 months, they grew that from 1,300. And most of that was organic, some of it was paid. The B2B focus is they are the ones investing all this time into building a cool brand factor for RoeDTLA, because that is what's going to attract the office tenants, right? They have 1.3 million square feet of office space that they have to sell. Now, Adidas and others have taken large chunks of it. But the whole point is, if you're going to put a division or a campus or something like that in a facility like that, you want to make sure it's really cool and it's hip and it's going to vibe with your employees, and they're going to feel like this is a really good place for us to have our office. And that's the B2B focus, right? So they're focused on social media and building this brand awareness purposefully from marketing to businesses and showing that they have a really cool environment. And then now they're jumping much more into paid and user journeys. By that I mean they now want to bring all this stuff to the RoeDTLA website. So a big transition for a development firm that's not only just owning the social media channels, but now wants to funnel everything back to the website so they can track and they can convert. Platform is another LA project, a little smaller, 5 acres, 60,000 square feet of retail, 120,000 of creative space. Platform is a really, really cool building. If you're ever in LA, go check it out. It's a really neat concept. It's high-end retail, but you feel very comfortable being there. Runyon is the developer and leasing company behind it. Now, compared to Atlas, they're extremely visible. They're upfront, they're marketing this, and they're hand-picking the tenants that go into the property. They're trying to build this really cool, high-end more local feeling or boutique feeling. So they say no to a lot of people who want to be there. And one of the big things that they do is they drive events. And again, this is the B2B thing. So for them, it's about engagement and then ultimately converting the prospective business into a retail tenant. And they use it through Instagram, but a lot of it was Facebook. So what they do is, and it's, you know, again, it's moderate, it's 2,000, but it's 2,000 of the right folks. And the B2B comes from the fact that they're putting on events for retailers and office clients, and they have this event space which is always sold out. I mean, it's months for you to schedule in there, and they'll pick who goes in there. They pay for the cost of putting the event on. They'll do a lot of pop-ups with carts or local artists and things like that. They'll run it for 30 days in this event space. And what they get out of that is basically anybody that comes into this, so since curated, they say, oh yeah, you fit the vibe, you're what we look for. Why don't you come in? We'll basically fund for you to have this space for 30 days. You have to put on two events, and there's all these rules about the kinds of events. But the reality is they convert all these tenants. So it costs them about $25,000 a month to do all these events, which they turn for 1,000 square foot, and some of them take more than 1,000 square foot, $200,000 a year with a multi-year contract. And it all starts with social media, because they're promoting all the events, both to get retailers interested in it and obviously consumers. And now we're moving into the whole Halloween season, so they're doing a bunch of pumpkin carving and decorations and all these things. So again, a company that's really owning that communication channel as a part of an event strategy. All right, so in closing, and I don't know if you can see the background, there's lots of dials and sliders and things like that, and that's what social media is. So there's definitely a place in B2B marketing, but again, it has to be part of a larger plan. It's not a thing by itself. You've heard this theme before, and I will echo it. You gotta try things, and you gotta be willing to fail fast, but two things I'll say about that. What worked 6 months ago all of a sudden mysteriously doesn't work anymore, right? And there's lots of reasons, known and unknown, why that is, right? So you're constantly having to try new things, but also don't fail too fast, because sometimes you gotta give it a little bit of a runway before you decide that it's not working. I don't know how many of you have a CEO who from Monday to Monday will decide that something's not working, right? And marketing is a little bit more than a week. It's a little bit more than 6 week board meetings, and it's a little bit more than quarters a lot of time, right? You have to be willing to kind of stick it out, but also know when it's time to fail. Again, make sure, we all know money is precious. Make sure you allocate property, right? It's content is designed, and it has to be optimized for where it's going. And you need to balance those budget dollars across all three things. You can no longer just do one thing. Say, I'll just have really cool content. It doesn't look good. I don't care about paid or making, you know, Google happy or making Instagram happy. You have to balance the demands of all three of these things. And then measure everything, right? As much as possible. And earlier we heard the panelists talk about, you know, sentiment and number of clicks and number of visitors. Any dimension you can put that it's trending in the right direction is really important. And as I mentioned, it's hard because some of this definitely has to be quantitative, but a lot of it has to be qualitative, right? You heard my example of our CEO was thrilled to know that some AWS sales reps had called our sales team to complain about the ads that we ran, right? That's a very qualitative example of something that clearly was working, right? Okay, so I know we have about 5-6 minutes for questions.
Yes. First off, let's give a round of applause for John. As somebody who spent a long time in B&B, that was a great B2B presentation. There you go, Stephanie.
Hi, so you talked a lot about social media being a space that B2B companies can kind of have fun. How do you broach that conversation with those higher-ups when you work for, say, a more legacy-type brand that's very traditional, very conservative, the whole idea of social media is still this really scary thing to them? How do you do that? Because that's something that I encounter frequently is just trying to do something that embraces more of these trends and what we're seeing to get attention, and just completely getting told, no, that's not us, that's not who we are?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. The short answer, you just do it anyway and ask for forgiveness later. I think a lot of it is you have to do that. I mean, the more pragmatic answer, and I've worked with a lot of CEOs that are very conservative and they want to be super involved, and you just sort of have to buckle down, and they want to review every ad or every promotion. They want to review every blog article, and you play that game for a couple weeks, a couple months, and then next thing you know, they're like, yeah, whatever you want. And that's when you can flip and start to be a little bit more edgy. I mean, ideally, you bring them along, but, you know, I've my whole career, I've heard nothing but like, none of this works, you know, pay-per-click doesn't work, and SEO doesn't work. It's like, have you heard of the company Google? I mean, it seems to be working just fine, right? So some of that is a lot of naysayers, a lot of negative, or the opposite is if they'll say, oh yeah, let's do something edgy, then completely unrealistic expectations. Like, well, how many deals did we close this week because of this thing that you ran? And the answer is most of the time is going to be zero, right? So, yes, questions?
Let me run back. I think another answer to that is, people are in business-to-business brands, and people buy stuff. They're consumers, so they've got the same kind of personal needs.
You actually just brought up a good point, which was my question. So I work with a automotive aftermarket supplier. Uh-huh. So our B2B are mechanics who are not allowed to be on social media during the day because they're in the garage. So we try to focus them at night, but how can we push content? Because they're a consumer at night, they necessarily might not like to see branded content during the day, but how can you try to get them involved in giving them content they want to see without overly selling the brand?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think some of that is you do tangential content, right? And in the automotive space, there's auto shows and there's all sorts of new things and new technology. And I think you want to focus more on the curated content and tying yourself to it. So be perceived as, oh, I want to follow this channel. They're talking about the Paris Auto Show and all these new things, and maybe start to tie to themes that matter to what you're doing in your business. So start with that, build some followers, build some positive sentiment towards what you guys do. And then you can, over time, and you have to be very cautious, start to, you know, using that 60-30-10 ratio, and yours would probably be more maybe 70-20, or 70-25-5, start to turn it into some kind of promotional message.
How about other questions for John?
All right, was this useful?
Yes.
All right, cool. All right, thank you very much.
I was going to ask you one more question, John.
Oh, all right, sorry.
So how do you make the case, and we run into this a lot, a B2B C-level executive who says, well, yeah, maybe that happened with sales over there, but our business is different.
Uh-huh.
It's never going to work. It's great after the fact to be able to show them numbers. How do you make that case and create the openness and the willingness to have those conversations, not just about fun, but yeah, this is part of sales. It's part of marketing
now. So I think if you go back to the life cycle, the bell curve, right? Now, you're giving me an example of if I'm in this industry and other folks have done it, I can point examples to, well, my three competitors are doing it and they're killing us, right? So at some point, you're dealing with the laggards that are further down on the bell curve, and it becomes a necessity so you can stay alive. I think what gets really more challenging is if you're a front runner in your industry and your competition's not yet doing that, how you convince your board, which a lot of times will be pretty conservative, right? One of the things, I don't consider myself that old, I have a gray beard, but that whatever. You know, a lot of times I'll say, we're too old to get it, right? Especially if your audience is younger, right? The way my daughter was a senior in college, the way she chooses to communicate in the channels is so foreign to me. I mean, I'm in marketing, I understand it, but it's not the way I would converse. So some of that too is getting to understand and getting your leadership team, if they're older, just to admit, okay, I'm too old to get it. Whatever you guys think is going to work. So those are not pleasant conversations.